driving you home every weekday afternoon. This is 105 Drive with Julian Clover.
A new play that looks at the events leading up to the First World War is being performed in Cambridge next week. 1914, Assassination Before Lunch, is written by Sean Lang. He's also a senior lecturer at the Anglia Ruskin. I'm pleased to say Sean is with us in the studio now. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much for coming in. So I need a bit of a history lesson, I guess, to start off with. The play is about the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
Yes.
And he was the leader of the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
That's right. He's the only man I can think of in history who's more famous for the way he died than for anything he did when he was alive. I mean, one or two other famous assassinations or deaths, but at least you know who they were. But the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, I think no one outside his immediate family could tell you anything at all about him. And he got shot.
Only just about a household name in his own household.
Right, yeah.
Not too far.
So, in a sense, what I'm trying to do with this play, which I hope is going to be the first of a series going through the centenary of the First World War each year. Some hearts will be sinking on that idea, but looking at key decisions, because most of the events that we tend to do about the First World War, particularly the theatrical ones, quite rightly look at the life of ordinary soldiers and the impact in the life of the trenches and the impact back at home, that sort of thing, you know. But what I'm trying to say is that the people up at the top making the big decisions aren't just names in history books, they were real people too. And they, in some ways, you know, they were in adequate or in a panic, in much the same way that, you know, the youngest soldier scared in the trenches was, you know, in a panic or whatever. So what this particular play, this first of them, is about, is when the Archduke had been assassinated, and there's a little, you know, you do get to see the Archduke before, so you get a sense of the character himself. It then falls down onto the shoulders of one man who's got to make the decision, how do you respond to this? Now, the countries involved, and you're quite right, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which is not a name which trips off the tongue very easily, you know, nowadays.
But that would be Austria and Hungary, near enough the same borders of those two countries today?
Yes, but with lots of other bits as well.
Okay.
So there were bits of what are nowadays, I mean, the Czech Republic was in it, so Slovakia, i.e. Czechoslovakia, as was. Parts of Poland were in it. Parts of, well, what became Yugoslavia, and is now, so you've now got Bosnia-Herzegovina, and you've now got Croatia and Slovenia, that's right. and even actually one or two bits of Italy.
Now, so they've been on something of a land grab, haven't they?
In the preceding period,
all of this.
At Tesco, you know, yeah. And then come back. And so they had all these different groups. And the reason it's got this rather cumbersome name is because originally it was just nice and easy. It was called the Austrian Empire. They were all under the Austrians. But the Hungarians were an ancient kingdom. They had a very strong sense of their, you know, proud history, and, you know, rightly so. And they'd always rather felt that, you know, they hadn't been conquered by the Austrians, which is true enough. They'd sort of, it was marriages and things like that had brought them together. And they rather, actually, it has to be said, they rather looked down on the other peoples. To cut what you can probably guess is a rather complicated story short, what happened was that the Austrians were forced into a compromise with the Hungarians. And what they set up was, in some ways, not unlike the way we might be going with sort of England and Scotland, a sort of compromise with a power-sharing arrangement, where they were very, very strict about this. It was not the Austrian Empire. It was, that's why it has this cumbersome name. The Hungarians were saying, no, it is the Austro-Hungarian, it's Austria-Hungary. So the Emperor of Austria, fine. And so anything to do with that, imperial, this, that and the other. But in Hungary, he was the King of Hungary. So it had to be the imperial and royal army of government. There were two separate parliaments, there were two different prime ministers and so on. However, when it came to foreign policy, and that's what this would involve, there was a central government, and it was an Austrian who was in charge of it, who was in fact the central character in the play, but he had to consult the Hungarians. So it was a complicated system, but that's what really it was very important.
And the Archduke himself, yeah, it wasn't just him which led to the First World War. There was much, much more besides.
Well, there's a whole alliance system, and the countries in Europe were scared of each other. That's the point. They were rivals, yes, but they were very nervous of each other, and it's easy to forget this, but they were scared of what would happen if they got this wrong. Now, nowadays, we can say, well, you know, what were they scared of? What was going to happen? Okay, your heir to the throne. It's a horrible thing to happen, to have the heir to the throne shot. Of course it is. But it doesn't mean you have to launch a European war. And they didn't think they were. what they were thinking was that if we don't do something, there'll be another terrorist outrage.
And then when you say they, is this the people outside in Britain, for example? What were their feelings at this
time? When I say they, the specific they I'm talking about there are the people in the Austrian government.
And within the inner circle.
Okay. But in each country, in each capital, there were, you know, similar people of similar classes and backgrounds, indeed very often, you know, knowing each other and getting on well. And they all sort of had this fear that if they didn't do something this time, something undefined, awful, would follow. Most people outside that little circle, you know, what nowadays we would call the Westminster Village or whatever, well, it's the equivalent of the Westminster Village in St. Petersburg and Vienna, what have you. Most people didn't know anything about this. I mean, in Britain, yes, the assassination, which is at the end of June, that was big news, no question. If you look at the Cambridge Daily News of the time, for example, it is a headline for a couple of days, but only for a couple of days. Then it gets forgotten. It's, you know, it's relegated.
Lost at the bottom of page 7, that
absolutely,
sort of thing.
Absolutely, yes. Right. And I mean, you do have to be fair, at the top of page 7, but nevertheless, it's a small paragraph, you know, top right. And there are other things going on. It was a boiling hot summer, and they're worried about that, how to keep cool. There were other things in the news, and the big thing in Britain that people were worried about was it looked as if there was going to be actual civil war. So it was that serious in Ireland. That's what all, you know, that's what's taking up the whole news. Foreign news about Austria-Hungary and Bosnia-Herzegovina is for people who you avoid at parties. You know, they're the ones who are interested in that, you know. And then suddenly, and it really is suddenly, almost out of the blue, suddenly at the end of July, in the last few days of July, suddenly you think, hey, wait a minute, this is really serious, because countries begin to declare war on each other. And what the play is about is trying to explain why the assassination led, in a way that no one wanted, to this outbreak of disaster.
I notice with interest that you have a moustache that don't have in your pictures.
Yes.
Is there any reason for that?
There is indeed, yes, because I am playing the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and he had rather a splendid moustache which curled up. I'm not sure if this... I've been growing it since the beginning of rehearsals, which was the beginning of September, so you've got 2 months' growth here.
It's not bad going, if I might say so.
Thank you, very kind,
It's close to Belgian proportions, at least.
I know. Whether it will curl up or not, I've got to try out. People have been saying, you know, you're going to keep it afterwards, and many people have said it does rather suit me. Unfortunately, they don't include my wife. So.
I guess you'll have the final say on that the performances are done and dusted next week. There's also a talk, I gather, as well,
yes.
A couple of before the performances.
That's right. Now, on the first night, I'm actually giving a talk about the history, but also about turning the history into a drama, and that's the sort of first half of the programme. It's not as long as the play, but we'll have an interval in between. And then on the Thursday night, because this is part of the Festival of Ideas, you see, so so we've got some discussion as well. And we've got a guest speaker, Professor Gary Sheffield, who's coming from the University of Wolverhampton. Now, Gary is a big name in First World War studies, and his books are not only widely read, but widely used even at school level. A couple of years ago, he came to give a talk in Cambridge, which I was chairing, and we had a large group from Comberton Village College. And they all came and we were talking about, you know, how kids learn about the First World War. And I remember I asked the students who were there, you know, which books do you actually use? And thinking that they'd say, we've got this textbook, we've got that textbook, and they all said, no, we use him. and they did. They used his works, and they all mobbed him for autographs afterwards, so that might be why he's keen to come back.
It's strange. I always recall the history that I did at school this period in time. It was always presented as being somewhat comical assassination. Is that
the
slant
true.
That you take? Or?
Yes, I mean, unless, of course, you happen to be, as I say, one of the nearest and dearest of him.
Well, precisely.
They did get him in the end. But it's true, the group who were trying to kill him were a group called the Black Hand. Now, that is a good name, the Black Hand, you know. But actually, they were a bunch of incompetents. They'd tried 3 assassinations and hadn't got anyone yet. They'd tried the Emperor and missed. They'd tried various people. And so that's one of the reasons why the Austrians didn't take it too seriously, because this lot, you know, they were school kids. They were sort of Gavrilo Princip, who actually got him, was 19. And I mean, they were like A-level
because it's interesting. You contrast this with the events in the Canadian Parliament last few hours, and you know, we didn't think it would happen to us. You know,
it
seems to be ever so slightly some parallels going
well,
on there.
Well, quite, yes. And, of course, there are plenty of assassinations or assassination attempts since. And this was pure chance, this one. There was a whole line of assassins along the sort of quay alongside the river as they were driving along. And the first one got cold feet. The second one hadn't realised that the Archduke's wife was going to be there and he sort of felt sorry for her, and so he didn't throw his bomb. The third one threw a bomb and it bounced off and exploded behind. Then he leapt in very dramatically into the river to sort of commit suicide and bite his poison tablet as he did. Unfortunately, the tide was out, it was a tidal river, and all he did was get his feet wet, and the poison didn't work, so they dragged him out. And as people may know, on the way back, which was what they were doing, they were heading out, there was a change of route, and somehow or other the drivers hadn't been told, and the driver of the Archduke's car, and in fact another couple of cars as well, went the wrong way. The Archduke's car, they said, oh, hang on, no, not this way. The driver stops to reverse. I've seen some books saying that the car didn't have any reverse gears. Others say that it did. You just needed, but they were a bit slow. I don't know. But anyway, it stopped. They stopped right bang in front of the remaining assassin who had a gun in his pocket. And literally, it was normally you'd have to get a moving target. Think of JFK or something. It's a moving target distance. Can imagine JFK actually very kindly stopping right in front of you at about 4 feet away. And so he just stepped forward and fired. And from what I've read, it sounds as if he didn't really know much about guns, and he was actually looking away, bang, bang, like that, as it were. And that's probably why the Archduchess got killed as well, because that wasn't the plan.
So pure chance. So the play is 1914, Assassination Before Lunch, and it's next Wednesday and Thursday, is that
that's
right?
That's right, at the Mumford Theatre.
Okay.
And if you go to the Mumford Theatre box office, you can order tickets there. And it's looking good.
Okay, that's great. Well, Sean, look, thank you very much for coming. I could go on and carry on and talk all the way through Sonic Delights, I think, at 7 o'clock tonight, but we must close here. But thank you very much for coming in. Sean Lang, senior lecturer in history at the Anglia Ruskin, and is also the playwright of 1914, Assassination Before Lunch.
The top five records from Cambridge's hottest musicians, as voted for by you.
Four minutes past 6 o'clock, it's time for our regular entertainment hour. In a short while's time, Hattie Simpson will be here. She'll be talking about Serena, also McBusted tour play in film, that sounds dangerous, also Love, Rosie, and all the theatre around Cambridge. Ahead of that, we'll look at the latest unsigned chart, and perhaps you were listening to Tim's new music generator last night. Lunaker were in the studio, and their song Bletchley is here this week as the new entry in the unsigned chart.
This is the chart you've been voting for. The Unsigned Chart on 105 Drive.
Lots of the things that many of us try to do, something approaching that has already been done. Lots of the things that many of us try to do. Something approaching that has already been done. Lots of the things that many of us try to do. Something approaching that has already been done. Lots of the things that many of us try to do. Something approaching that has already been done.
Cold eyes displaced by affection. It hurts as I close for attention.
Lots of the things that many of us try to do, something approaching that has already been done.
Rather interesting sampling going on that one. It's Bletchley from Lunacre. It's the new entry in the unsigned chart this week. Lunacre are a Cambridge five-piece band. Four grew up in Cambridge, one in somewhere called Oxford. They are Benji, Sam, also Jacob and JP. Three of the members met each other at Hills Row. They went to university. Then when they returned from university, formed the band and can now be found gigging around the city. There's a Facebook page for them, which is LNACR. Facebook.com, LNACR. I think they need a couple more vowels or maybe a consonant or two in all of that. But that's how you'll find Lunacre on Facebook. And as I say, the new entry this week on the chart is called Bletchley. So quite enjoyed that. A little bit different from some of the tracks. So do give it a listen and make your vote if you do so wish. Now we will check out what's happening in the rest of the chart from 5 down to 1.
The Unsigned Chart on Cambridge 105.
So we've lost Fast Infamy, so no more making jokes based on Kenneth Williams' appearances in Carry On films. We'll count down the rest of the chart. At number 5, Careless Sons, Carbon Dating. That was the last new entry. Number 4, Plum Jam, One-Eyed Jack. Number 3, John Chisholm, Made For This. At 2, Screen People, All-Seeing Eyes. And moving in, I think, for some considerable time, Pia Dean featuring Nikki Dean Hart. Her song is called Clarity. The number 1 in the unsigned chart this week.
To find a little clarity. dog eyes. Hold your breath and count to ten. Take that big leap of faith and chase away all those heavyweight fears. I'm feeling my spirit wants to break free and spend some time alone with me to find a little clarity and figure out where I wanna be.
Has all the makings of a long runner on the chart. Will it make it the full 20 weeks? Will it make it next week? That's kind of up to you, really. You need to place your vote at cambridge105.fm/unsignedchart for Clarity from Pia Dean, or perhaps any of the other artists that you've heard. And we'll be playing them regularly across the day and 105 Breakfast right the way through to 105 Drive on Monday night just after 6. We'll give you the unsigned chart as it stands, and then on Wednesday Tim Willett will count down the new chart, and he'll give you all the details after 8 o'clock. But cambridge105.fm/unsigned chart
on 105 FM and online.
Cambridge 105 on a Thursday night. I can say night now because it's completely dark outside, and Hattie is here to look at Philemon Theatre.
Hello.
Hello.
Speaking of it getting dark at night, clocks change on Sunday.
They do.
Yeah.
Which way?
Backwards.
Very good. Spring forward, fall back.
I'm working till midnight that day as well, so, you know, bit of a lion.
Sort of good in the roundabout way. Phil Rowe is the that's the lucky one. I remember when I was doing Sunday breakfast a couple of years back now, I'd very cleverly, this must have been the spring one, and I very cleverly put my my clock back. Unfortunately, it was a clock radio, one of these automatic things, and whatever signal made it change decided to put it back another hour.
So classic,
no,
Julian.
I know, so no such luck for Phil, hopefully. He'll be with you at 8 o'clock GMT on Sunday morning.
Yeah,
you can listen
not
on your
BST.
Way home. No.
Yeah.
Okay, film. Where are we starting?
Films. We're going to start with Serena. So this is Hot Screen Couple? Okay, I'll just carry on. Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper reunite for this powerful Depression-era drama. Recently married couple George and Serena Pemberton relocate from Boston to the mountains of rural North Carolina in 1929. Their plan is to build a timber empire. Their work is arduous and the environment tough. Greedy, manipulative Serena thrives in this male world, overseeing the workforce, hunting rattlesnakes, and even saving a man's life in the wilderness. But when she discovers that she cannot bear children, she sets out to murder the mother of George's illegitimate child from a previous relationship. This plot is
People didn't have previous relationships in the 1920s. Don't be silly.
I know, a bit outrageous. So we've seen...
Except in Downton Abbey, of course.
Oh my gosh, don't get me started on Downton Abbey. Oh my gosh, I love it so much. But this series, I don't know, it's just sort of missing something, I think. I think there's too much
going
on.
The second series had a bit of a wobble. It was kind of like the first season of Downton Abbey, you were thinking to yourself, why is this on ITV? The second series, you knew exactly why.
I love Downton Abbey so much. I've got a signed book by the director or producer.
Lord Kilwillie?
No, he's a writer.
Oh, okay.
And his niece as well. But that's to do with Cambridge Literary Festival, which I will talk about in a couple of weeks' time.
I think we're moving around at a fair pace here.
It's quite
fast-paced. Back to Serena, yes. Okay, so she's in the 1929.
Yes.
And she's in the mountains, and
yes,
she's killing rattlesnakes and murdering women. Okay.
Yeah. So this sees a reunion of Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper, who we've seen previously in Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle. And incidentally, this film was made in between the making of those two films. So why it's taken this long to come out, I'm not entirely sure why. It did, however, take 18 months to film. So bit of a long journey, this one.
Yes.
As opposed to the general sort of 3 months.
I guess the follow-up question to it, if it's taken all this time to come out, what are the critics saying about it?
Well, it premiered at the London Film Festival earlier this month, and it's had sort of fairly mixed reviews so far. People are sort of throwing around the world with the word dull quite a lot, but I don't know. I'm often with films like this, sort of set in this era, set in this sort of scene, they are very slow burners. I mean, you know, Lawless, Cold Mountain, all a similar time, all a similar setting, and all take a while to get to the action. Lawless, you know, has quite a lot of violence in it, and this one, not as intense as that. So, I mean, we know that Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence have brilliant on-screen chemistry together. They were fantastic in Silver Linings Playbook. They didn't get enough screen time, at least together, let alone sort of throughout the film, in American Hustle. But we all know that wasn't one of my favourite films. but Jennifer Lawrence actually suggested Bradley Cooper for the role in this film. It was originally set to be directed by Darren Aronofsky and star Angelina Jolie. So I think it would have been a slightly different film.
Different dynamic going on.
But yeah, so it's. I think it's fair to say it's splitting critics at the moment. I think it's going to be up to viewer preferences what your take is on this when it's released tomorrow in cinemas.
Cue times.
Yes. So you can catch it at the Arts Picture House tomorrow when it's released at 1 o'clock, 3.30, 6 o'clock and 8.45, and on Saturday at 12.15, 3.35, 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock, and at Cineworld tomorrow at 6.15 and 8.50, and on Saturday at 6.15 and 8.50 as well. So go see it and tell me what you think.
Okay.
I would love to know.
Interesting. Drive, Matt, cambridge105.fm, if you have some thoughts on that. What do you want to do next, then?
Should we do another film? And then a musical break?
Okay, yes, let's do another film, then. And
fantastic.
Said musical break.
Time it well. So the next one on my list is Love, Rosie. This is an adaptation of a Cecilia Ahern book, who we know from P.S. I Love You, which was a hugely successful romantic drama. The book was originally titled Where Rainbows End, and it features, the film features Lily Collins and Sam Claflin, starring as lifelong best friends navigating young adulthood in this moving and funny romantic comedy. Ever since they were kids, Alex and Rosie have been inseparable best mates, but this close friendship becomes more complicated in their teenage years, as they're always prone to do.
Everything's always complicated in teenage years. Getting up in the morning is, well, getting up at all, really.
I still find getting up in the morning an arduous task, but, you know, I'm only 22, so I think I can be excused for the moment. Rosie falls for oafish hunk Greg, Alex, meanwhile, is accepted onto a scholarship at Harvard. When Rosie suggests to her beautiful friend Bethany that she should meet up with him in Boston, romantic sparks fly. Now Alex and Rosie couldn't be further apart, but will these soulmates ever wind up together? So this is Lily Collins, who we've seen previously in Mortal Instruments and other stuff as well that wasn't very good, so I feel I shouldn't mention that, so as to not taint your view of her. And Sam Claflin, who we've seen in Hunger Games, as Finnick O'Dare, and, you know, next Hunger Games, out soon. I'm so excited. But this is another young adult adaptation. Cecilia Ahern isn't necessarily a young adult writer, but this is definitely a book that's firmly entrenched in that genre. And the book has had fantastic reviews. It's got a great reputation. It's funny. The characters are really charismatic. And it's a story told through emails and letters and texts and notes and so forth. I've just started reading it, so, you know, I can't give too much away at the moment.
I think the screen treatment could be interesting as well as to how they deal with that, because I guess Sherlock started the thing of putting text on screen as a character who was reading them. And I've seen that done in a few other things since.
Yes, including Hollyoaks, which was, you know, doing it about 5 years ago, but let's not mention that.
I'm out of the demographic for Hollyoaks.
So this film has been likened to a Richard Curtis movie with an Instagram filter. That's speaking to the generation, isn't it? So it's going to be very interesting to see how it adapts on the big screen. I mean, the young adult adaptation genre has massively taken off lately. Everything that's successful and a lot that's not is being snapped up like wildfire at the moment. I can't read as much as they're green lighting, so it's a madness at the moment. It's getting mixed to positive reviews, the film itself, but generally pretty good feelings about the storyline and performances. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'll probably try and read the book and see the film before I'm back in next week. So good luck to me.
Yeah, good luck to you.
So you can catch it. It opens tomorrow in view. Tomorrow at 3:20, 5:50 and 8:15, and on Saturday at 3:20, 5:50 and 8:15. And at Cineworld on Friday at 3:20 and 8:20, and on Saturday at the same times as well. That's 3:20 and 8:20.
Okay. Would you like to introduce our next musical item?
Yes, please. The next... Oh, my gosh, I'm so excited. One of my favourite bands, Busted, with their classic Year 3000.
I think we're going to be getting a webcam in here of some description. I'm not entirely sure when it's going in or whether or not it'll have sound. But actually, sometimes the conversations off-air are actually rather better than the ones on.
I think I
get all the showbiz gossip here involving Busted and McFly and all the rest of them.
I think I revealed just how far my love for Busted and McFly goes in my knowledge of their personal lives.
I've seen Howie Judd play cricket.
Wow, that's
he did.
Really cool.
I don't know if you've ever been yourself. There's the event they have at Carlton. It was a little bit later this year. Normally it's sort of like May time, but it was in September, and I was away this time around. But one year he turned up and played in the celebrity squad or whatever they call it.
Wow,
against the Bunburys or for the Bunburys.
I'm gonna have to get myself down there at some point. Harry Judd, obviously the one who won Strictly Come Dancing.
Obviously.
Yeah, obviously. Danny Jones, the one who was on the opera reality show, Catherine Jenkins and them. Yep.
Yeah. Are they having
the one?
Which
well
one?
Done, Emma. Pop star to opera pop, star.
Oh yes, I saw some of that. It was very strange. Very strange. It's almost like the Tom Daley one.
Oh my gosh! Splash.
Come dive with me.
Why didn't they call it that? That was brilliant.
Missed an opportunity. The reason why we're talking all of this, we've actually got a performance of McBusted.
McBusted the movie! It's not actually called McBusted the movie, but it's called Tour Play, and it's playing exclusively at View on the 28th of October and the 1st of November.
Is that because nobody else wanted it?
No, don't be silly, Julian.
Okay, sorry.
In the summer of 2014, I'm going to set the stage for you. In the summer of 2014, the world's ultimate supergroup hit the road. I can't keep that voice up, I'm sorry. When McFly and Busted announced the birth of McBusted, it wasn't just the fans who went crazy, me included. The whole music world was holding its breath, waiting to see what rabbit McBusted will pull out of their collective hat. What is this synopsis? Nobody was disappointed, least of all me. A massive 30-day arena tour sold sold out practically overnight, including the biggest gig of the summer in the middle of Hyde Park and a fantastic gig at Manchester MEN Arena, which I went to, which was marvellous. McBusted had promised a dazzling display of perfect pop and breathtaking theatricality. They delivered big time! Flying DeLoreans, flames, fireworks and confetti cannons. And did we mention the guys descending from the sky on their very own flying saucer? That actually happened and it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen on stage. Filmographer David Spearing had unrestricted access to the band throughout the crazy summer. The result is tour play. It takes the viewer behind the scenes of one of the biggest musical events of recent years. I think that, like, even I think that's a bit of an exaggeration, I'm not going to lie. It gives an unprecedented glimpse of life backstage and gets up close and personal with each member of the band in a series of endearingly honest and revealing interviews. So this is going to be great if you love fun, happiness and music. And also McBusted. So I'll be there.
I'm just thinking to myself, in years to come, you know, in the way that Channel 5 show ABBA the movie from time to time, do you think they'll be showing this?
Yes. 100% yes.
Okay.
It is sort of, you know, following in the steps of the Katy Perry movie, the Justin Bieber movie, the One Direction movie. So it wasn't a massive surprise when they announced it, and they sort of tried to keep it a secret for a long time. But
do you think there'll be a sequel of enough threads left hanging for fans to demand more?
I sure hope so. Depends if they do another tour. But seeing as they've just released their first single, Air Guitar, and an album is on its way, we may well get a tour again. I'm so excited.
I'm just so disappointed. So don't use it for the trailer.
Not after the last one. So, yes, if you're a big McBusted fan, this is going to be great. You know, if you went to the shows, or if you didn't, then you're going to get to see parts of what was an amazing stage show. There was so much thought that went into it and so much given to the fans. It was brilliant. I took my mum, and even she enjoyed it.
Is she a McBusted fan as well?
Well, she is now. That was my 22nd birthday present. So, you know, I'm not sure if that says a lot about me or my mum, but, you know. We enjoyed it thoroughly.
I'm glad you did. Okay, we'll turn... do times.
Yes, it's playing twice, so you can catch it on Tuesday the 28th of October at 7 o'clock and Saturday the 1st of November, also at 7 o'clock. They're the only showings, so book your tickets on the View website or in person at the View counter and go along for what will surely be a fantastic, fantastic McBusted movie.
Dear, I don't think container... Right, Hattie's going to go and have a sort of... cold shower or something after that.
Bit of a lie down.
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be quiet. It is 10 minutes away from 7 o'clock. Ben and Ivan and the third man. I don't know who the third man is. Then, do you know who he is? Anybody? No?
No, okay. I feel really bad now.
No, I don't think anybody knows. I think that's kind of the point. But he'll be here. They'll be here after 7 tonight. Meantime, we've got some theatre to do, have we not?
We do indeed. We're going to head off to the ADC Theatre, as we're often wont to do, to Sophia Town. It's only history if you steal something really large, like a country, then it's history. In West Central Johannesburg, artists, activists and illegal bars make up the cultural heat of South Africa. The freehold township of Sophia Town, home to Mandela, Tutu Nkosi and Miriam Makeba. With their group areas ACT, the apartheid regime seeks to racially and geographically segregate the diverse population, and Sophia Town finds its very existence threatened. When local resident and Shabin owner Marmariti's politically challenged household welcomes a Jewish girl, Ruth Golden, to stay, class warfare, racism and rebellion erupt. Political journalist Jakes, truanting teenager Lulu, local gangster Mingus, his girlfriend Precious, disturbed henchman Charlie, and local politician and mystic Fafi all seek to save their home from the imminent construction of a whites-only suburb, aptly named Triumph. An evocative piece of political musical theatre, Sophia Town is a history lesson that won't easily be forgotten. So this is going to be a really interesting one. It's been talked about at the ADC for quite some time. And now it's finally on stage. It's going to be a fantastic piece of theatre. It's very politically charged. Mm. And also a musical. So those two things don't often go hand in hand. But it's got a great cast. It's running until this Saturday at 7:45. Tickets are £12 and £9. You can get those from adctheatre.com. And... yeah, I think it's going to be a really fascinating piece of theatre. I'm hoping to get down there this weekend. And it's had fantastic reviews so far. So, I'm not sure there's too much more to say on
it. Okay, that sounds pretty good. But, all right.
Yes, I think it kind of speaks for itself. But yes, I would definitely recommend it.
And one more I think you've got as well.
One more, indeed. Women of the World Festival at Cambridge Junction. The South Bank Centre's Women of the World Festival has now come to Cambridge. Join them for a packed day of events that celebrate the incredible achievements of women and girls as part of this year's Cambridge Festival of Ideas. Explore the most potent topics for women today with fascinating talks, heated debates, lively workshops and exciting activities for all ages. Share your challenges, exchange ideas and work out what it really means to be a woman in the inspirational company of some of our best journalists, mums, daughters, scientists, artists, campaigners and next door neighbours. So this is a really exciting day. There's all sorts going on. There'll be a marketplace running in the J1 part of Cambridge Junction, which will feature all sorts of stalls, information stalls, selling stalls, and a feminist nail bar. So you can a feminist nail bar.
Okay.
Yes, this is fascinating.
How does this work?
They've been all over the place. They're hugely successful, and you can get the images of your favourite feminists on your nails. And they look amazing. I've seen some pictures of their previous work.
Are you going?
I'm definitely going.
Are you going to have yours done?
I am definitely hoping to
have mine
done.
We need photographs then, don't we, really?
Yes, absolutely. I shall bring them with me next week. I'll hopefully still have them next week, if I'm really good. there's lots of talks and debates going on during the day. There's a newspaper review. Oh my gosh, there's so much to talk about. What's wrong with pink? Pink for girls and blue for boys. Right, wrong. Join neuroscientist Vicky Pastursky, Emma Moore from the Pink Stinks campaign and others. The Pink Stinks campaign is fascinating.
The anti-pink?
It's not anti-pink, it's anti-gender stereotyping.
Okay.
Or gender colouring, if you like. And sort of I know, that's a terrible phrase. Getting rid of specific, like, pink toys for girls, blue toys for boys, and getting rid of the labels in like Toys R Us saying, you know, these are girls' toys and these are boys' toys.
I think my sister's currently having an issue. I think it's with a coat that used to belong to my niece, which is definitely red, and wants to give it to her brother. Unfortunately, my niece keeps referring to the coat as pink rather than red, and it's a potential issue. And his too, so...
Oh! but yes, so there's loads going on throughout the day. You can find out more information at wowcambridge.cam.ac.uk or on the Cambridge Junction website, junction.co.uk. There'll also be a creche running throughout the day. It's a free childcare sessions available for day pass holders, so you can get in touch with Cambridge Junction for more information. This is on Sunday the 26th of October this weekend. It's running across the whole of Cambridge Junction, starting at 10:30 a.m, running right through to the evening with a cabaret as well, an upbeat cabaret format celebration of local women with something to say and their performing talents, the selection of spoken word, comedy, dance, burlesque and more. So you can get a full ticket including the cabaret for £10, £8 concessions, or day only passes for £5 and £3 concessions. It's going to be a fantastic day celebrating.
That's good. And the day itself again is?
Sunday the 26th of October.
Sunday 26th. So, this coming Sunday.
This coming Sunday.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you next week.